Welcome to Sacred Realms. Huh? It's a great day in Hyrule, y'all. Welcome to Sacred Realms, a Zelda retrospective podcast. I am your host, Lyndon Willoughby, as always, joined by my co-host, Matt Willoughby. Matt, you know what I just realized? We are halfway into the hiatus between seasons 4 and 5 of our show.
We are? Are we really halfway already?
Yeah, dude. Breath of the Wild episode 1 drops like... Just a shade over a month from today.
Oh, you know, February being a short month is throwing me off on that. But I think, I mean, at least as far as a month-wise, you're right. But yeah, man, that time just flies. God, I need to start playing a little bit more.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need to play Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I should probably do that. I'm too caught up in the Destiny new season that just dropped earlier this week. And it is... It's got its hooks in me, Lyndon. It's got its hooks.
Well, you know, well, there is that, and I do sympathize, but also you spent a fair bit of your time playing a noted decade-old game, Mass Effect 3.
Hey, it's the Legendary Edition. They gave it a fresh coat of paint and a whole lot of other things that are amazing. Okay?
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm here to remind you of your responsibilities to this podcast, okay?
Yes, I am well aware of my responsibilities. I did make my way... more than halfway to Kakariko Village last night, did some shrines along the way, killed a bunch of moblins and bokoblins and various things. So,
yeah, well, that's progress. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our co-host for this episode because I was about to address him. And then I was like, I should probably introduce him first. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him, you love him. He's Max Nichols. He's back for another episode. How you doing, Woo! Max?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about Zelda like I always am. Also, I'm kind
as
of amazed
you, as you
that
perpetually
I'm ahead
are.
Of Matt in my Breath of the Wild replay for this podcast.
You know, I definitely that. I acknowledge that I have been slacking a little bit. There's definitely an acknowledgement of slack on my
part. It is like an apocalypse of amazing AAA games right now competing for my attention.
Right? Like, I didn't even get Elden Ring, and I wanted to get Elden Ring, and I didn't buy it, and like... It got a 10 out of 10 from like every single game review ever. And I'm like, I want Elden Ring, but I don't have time to play Elden Ring right now.
As a game designer who's like specialty, the thing I'm passionate about is world design. Man, I really need to play Elden Ring and Horizon, and I work on Destiny. So I should get through Witch Queen. And right now I'm really loving like the World Ends With You, the Neo version, which is not something that's on everyone else's radar, but I kind of fell in love with it like at a very inconvenient time, which was a week before 7 other games I wanted to play released. I'm very glad that Breath of the Wild is a non-linear game, and if I want, I can just skip all of it and go straight to the parts of it that I'm going to have to talk about and ignore everything else for the podcast in the future.
And you could even argue that doing so would lead to a superior podcast experience because you would by necessity be bringing a very different perspective to that episode just because like Matt and I will have been going like, oh, we went here to here to here to here and we've got all these things and we've got stamina and good weapons and crap. And you could just be here like, well, I kind of just rolled down here from the Great Plateau with a stick
and a bokoblin arm that's still twitching on my back. It's fine.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely not telling you not to do that. I was very interested in Elden Ring as well. And I've never even really been a big FromSoft game player, but there's so many comparisons that have been drawn about from that game to Breath of the Wild. And that intrigued me, if nothing else. I know it's kind of a meme right now. It's like, oh, every new game that comes out is like Breath of the Wild.
We are right now, we're in like day one of the super hype cycle. There's a chance that by the time people listen to this episode, it will have died down. Everyone will be like, yeah, it's kind of like, it's like Dark Souls, but it's open world. Or maybe they'll be like, oh yeah, it really is the sea change like Breath of the Wild was. Everyone seems to think it's going to be, I don't know yet. I haven't played.
Yeah, those tend to be kind of hit or miss. Like, I mean, that with Halo Infinite, it was the same thing. Everyone was like, oh, this is the Breath of the Wild of Halo, right? It's Halo if you mixed it with Breath of the Wild. And that was like such hyperbole that was getting thrown around to a crazy extent. And then I went and like played it all and beat it. And I was kind of like, well, I mean, yeah, that's sort of just like Halo and Breath of the Wild, you know?
It really
I mean,
is. Like, I don't know.
We could have a whole episode about what the hell do people mean when they compare literally everything on Earth to Breath of the Wild. They're always
it has a non-pedestrian or vehicular travel component. You can in some way travel on many different axes. It has a hero shot that involves a sweeping vista, and I guess it's got like, I don't know, clearable outposts of some kind.
But you also just described like all of the Ubisoft style open world games from, you know, the decade prior to Breath of the Wild. So what makes everyone attached to Breath of the Wild instead? I have a whole bunch of shots. But
I mean, I can tell you that I never really played many of the Ubisoft open world games besides like Assassin's Creed 1, 2, and 3. Like, meaning like 1, 2, and then I think I played... Did I play Brotherhood? I think I played Brotherhood.
Brotherhood was the one.
You played Odyssey, didn't you?
I did. I never beat it. But I did play it. I enjoyed it a lot. But also, it was one of those that was on like $5 on gold, and you got all the expansions and everything thrown at you. And that was during one of Destiny's downtimes. So I was doing that for a while. But then a new season of Destiny came out, and I started playing that again, and just never got back into it.
Yeah, the list of games that I have always wanted to play but don't because I'm just like engrossed in Destiny is very long. And of course the only reasonable thing to do with that being my situation in life was to just go one step further and tie my employment status to the people who make Destiny. So like that was only the natural thing to do in that situation.
Just solidify like, your addiction to the game by just working for it. Just make money off of it at least, yeah. Right?
There's this interesting thing where like every time something comes along and it's like it changes a whole genre or something. It's like defining an era of a medium, whether we're talking about Breath of the Wild or like Game of Thrones or I don't know, Dark Souls 1. It's always something that took a bunch of different elements that and did them really well in a way that combines in a new kind of way. And then afterwards, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to make it just like that. And they copy like one part of it. Or they like, it looks the same in half of it. And the other, they kind of missed the other half of the things that the game did really well. So you end up with this thing where like everyone's like, oh, it's just like Breath of the Wild. And there's like seven different things they might be talking about when they say that.
Right.
I feel like we're actually coming up on a moment like that with movies in which everything is like, oh, this is like the Spider-Man No Way Home of X, Y, and Z movie property, right? As we get into like fan service-y multiverse kind of movies, you know?
Ugh.
I feel like there's a wave coming of that. So that'll be fun. But I do want to table the whole why we like what does a Breath of the Wild like even mean, just because as we're talking about it, I'm realizing that we could probably spin off an entire another episode about just that. And I'm not here to like burn through content unnecessarily. I will here in just a second get into letting you, the viewers, know, or the listeners, excuse me, know what we are actually here to talk about. Before we do that, I do just want to say, Max, that Matt and I have managed to record our first Breath of the Wild episode. We did get the Great Plateau under our belts, and that ended up being a solid like two-ish hour episode. Like that one ended up being longer than the one with you and Melora and both of us.
Yeah, so. That one, it was a doozy of an episode, but man, it was so good. Yeah, it was very good.
Well, I'm excited.
If I do say
it.
So myself.
Cool. Well, Breath of the Wild is not specifically what we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about a topic that Max brought up with me earlier today that after some reflection, I realized Matt and I, you know, have kind of been skirting around it in a lot of ways in our critical analyses of the games we've played so far. And that is going to be a conversation around the differences between 2D and 3D Zelda titles, what our preferences might be, what our biases individually might be, things that we think one does well versus the other, vice versa, maybe some things that none of us had thought about before in comparing and contrasting the two. And that seems like a really good time to have that conversation, seeing as we've done a little bit of each at this point. We've done two 3D titles. We've done Ocarina of Time and Skyward Sword. And then we've done two top downs. We've done Link's Awakening and A Link to the Past. And we're about to embark upon a quest on the most 3D ass version of Zelda that's ever existed from here. So, it just seemed like the right time. Before we dive into that conversation, though, I'm just going to go ahead and get the housekeeping out of the way so that we can get right into the juicy deets. If you didn't know, Sacred Realms is a weekly re-examination of The Legend of Zelda, one little slice at a time. Sacred Realms drops every Wednesday and is available on all major podcast networks. Every week, we play a new section of a Zelda game. Then we sit down here to talk and to drop our hot takes. If that sounds fun to you, please head over to Apple Podcasts, hit that subscribe button, be sure to leave us a review. 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated, and they have a chance to get a shout out here on the show. 5-star reviews are now available on Spotify as well. So if that's where you listen to us, please drop us a 5-star rating there. It's very much appreciated. If you want more Sacred Realms in your life, you can head over to patreon.com/sacredrealmspod to get access to listener mail, vote on what game we play next, and much more. Additionally, Master Sword patrons and above get acknowledged by name in every episode. And this is actually the first episode that you are going to be listening to in which we do this. Like I said before, we recorded episode 1 of Breath of the Wild and we did it there. But this is the first time that anyone is actually going to be hearing that kind of like chronologically. So here it goes. I guess I should have had the Patreon pulled up for this, huh? All right. Those legendary. Yeah, I know, right? But we're just flying by the seat of our pants here, and it's fine. A certain off the cuff energy is one of the things that I think makes this podcast special. Or at least that's what I tell myself. All right. Those legendary individuals are Kolku, Aiden, Rowan, Joshua, Hyrule Podcasters, Keep It Going Podcast, Dante, Jeff, Mary, Brittany, Davey, Haru the Mighty, Derek, Albert, Mark, Andy, Cameron, Tyler, Ben, Daniel, Nick, Travis, Christian, Jonathan, Max, Nichols, who is currently with us on stream. We love you, Max. Garrett and Drew. We could not make this show without all of your generous support, and we appreciate you very, very much. And of course, you may have noticed that some of the things that were mentioned in that housekeeping segment are not true for the current week that we're in. Obviously, we didn't play a new section of a Zelda game this week. We are in a hiatus period, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, between seasons 4 and seasons 5 of our show. We are giving ourselves a buffer zone in which we're going to bank a lot of Breath of the Wild playtime and record a few episodes. We're doing that so that we do not have to kill ourselves playing Breath of the Wild week to week and recording an episode on that same schedule, because it's a massive game and we don't want to do that to ourselves. We want to give it the room that it deserves. So that is where we're at the moment. Some of us are playing a little bit more Breath of the Wild week to week than others, but that's okay. We don't judge anybody for their life choices, Matt.
Yeah, well, I feel like you do judge me, so
that's we're just worried about you, regardless. Matt. We don't want you to kill yourself playing Breath of the Wild too much.
Well, that's fair. Okay, thank you, Max. That's a much kinder way of putting it than Lyndon has been, so thank you.
I texted him the other week. I was like, hey, you playing more Breath of the Wild? And he's like, well, no, not really. I mean, I haven't been. I was like, I mean, you do you, but I feel like the last thing that you want to be doing is having to play 10 hours a week of Breath of the Wild starting on March 30th every week until like July. So
yeah, this is for you, Matt. Rough.
Yeah. Yeah, we believe in you. We know you
can do it. We got it.
All right. Without further ado, let's get into the meat of this episode, which is going to be our conversation around 2D and 3D, or rather, I should say top down and then 3D titles, because at this point, even the top downs are using 3D graphics engines and stuff like that. We haven't gotten a a pure 2D Legend of Zelda title since, what, Max Minish Cap?
Yeah, I'd say so. Can't think of anything else.
Yeah, everything after that was like, I mean, even on the DS, that was like, I mean, those polygonal 3D graphics, even though they were top down, your Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks. So
it's been a really long time.
Yeah, it's been a while since we had just kind of like an actual, you know, 16-bit adjacent art style on these top down games. But regardless, 2Ds and 3Ds for ease of identifying. I want to start the conversation off by going around the horn, and I'm going to start with you as our guest, Max. Do you, and Matt and I are going to answer this question here in just a second as well, do you have a pre-existing bias towards one of these versus the other, as honestly as you can possibly answer this?
I don't think I do. I started in 2D games, and my favorite Zelda game is a 2D game. But these days, if someone was like, what do you want your next Zelda game to be, 2D or 3D? I'd be like, I'd rather get the big 3D... you know, tentpole console release. Yeah. Give me Breath of the Wild 2, not Phantom Hourglass 2.
yeah, I mean, I think everybody virtually can agree on that one, right?
But I think I think there are other strengths
I think you're right.
That are present in the 2D, the top-down games that you might not see in Breath of the Wild.
It is just funny because, like, obviously there was a day when the 2D releases were the big tentpole console, you know, releases of their day. But yes, the distinction is a relevant one to point out.
It would be a more interesting question if someone was like, pick a, what if they put the budget of a 3D one into a top-down game? What would you like? Think of that, Max. That might give me more pause.
Well, that's okay. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. Sit on that for a minute, Matt. Everyone knows what you're going to say, but like,
yeah. I like the 2D games more, Lyndon.
Well, why you got to be that way? Now you're just being dishonest and throwing the episode. Yes, I'm throwing
it under the bus. No, obviously, as I have been very vocal about throughout our entire run of 4.5 seasons here, I have a preference for the 3D Zelda games, and I think I have to be honest that some of that probably just comes from the era of gaming that I grew up in, and that was formative for me in the development of this hobby. Almost all of those games that are impactful to me from, you know, the earliest points of gaming were all 3D non-top-down games. So there's got to be at least some formational bias there, but there it is. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. So I actually had to think about this one for a minute. It really, in the end, came down to a question of math. You know, obviously my first experience with the Zelda series was Link's Awakening, and that game is still immensely special to me. I love it very much, and I've had a lot of great experiences with other top-down games. But I think if I were just to put the number of games that I feel very strongly about versus the ones that I could kind of take or leave, there are more of the 3D titles in the, you know, couldn't live without it column than the top down column for me. And a lot of that is just kind of like timing. A lot of that is like release date bias, just because at least two of the games that we're putting in the top down category, even though Zelda 2 is not strictly speaking a top down game. But like, you know, these all kind of exist before before I jumped on board with the series. So yeah, a lot of these are just kind of before my time of being like really interested in Zelda as a series. But even with that being said, I think that I've been more emotionally invested in the 3D titles, generally speaking. There have been a few exceptions. Obviously, everyone knows kind of where Matt and I are with like Twilight Princess. You know, but even that one I like quite a lot. And I think, you know, once you get past that, your Wind Wakers and Breath of the Wilds, Majora's Mask, Ocarina of Time, like Skyward Sword, I love those games and am so immersed by them. So I've got to give it to the 3Ds. But so that's, you know, that's kind of where we're all landing right now. I think, Max, I was sort of expecting, I was half and half on where you were going to land with this. I don't know. I was like, I could really see Max coming in and swinging hard for like ride or die top down Zelda games. Mm.
Those people do exist. I've met those fans. There's a few of them left still. Back when Ocarina of Time first came out, there were a lot of like disgruntled like 2D Zelda fans that were like, this isn't Zelda. Ask Melora about that sometime.
Is Melora one of those people?
I won't speak for her.
Okay.
But I think she may have had some more nuanced feelings than just loving everything about Ocarina of Time right away.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
I can respect that. So I guess this leads us into our first point of conversation, which is that, Max, in your estimation, as a person who is a game designer by trade and you know, who is informed on the theory of game design, do you feel like the 3D Zelda games, from a design philosophy standpoint, have a strong lineage that comes from the 2D games? Like, do you feel like they have more similarities than they do differences?
Oh, that's a doozy right out the gate. I do think that there is a strong lineage. I think you can trace ideas and concepts and some of the fantasies and goals that they're pursuing when they build these games straight from the 2D games, you know, Link to the Past, Link's Awakening in particular, into the 3D games. It's a lot of people underestimate how different they are. Because there's some very massive differences. I think, like, from a moment-to-moment gameplay perspective, they might as well be totally different games. But I do think that there's shared kind of player experience goals that they have that come through in both.
What would you say is a primary example of the shared player experience goal that you see through the top-down and the 3D?
Yeah, so... to my eyes, the overarching theme of the Zelda series is creating a feeling of exploring a world. They want that sense of discovery. They want to create the feeling within the player of there being this vast world and not knowing what's around the corner and feeling a sense of curiosity and desire to go, like, see what's there. And I think that is very present in both the 2D and the 3D games. Funny enough, I think Breath of the Wild and Zelda 1 are the two that express that most clearly. And you don't get much more different in terms of visuals and perspective than those two games.
Yeah.
Well, and this is such an interesting topic, because one of the things that Matt and I keep coming back to, we mentioned this a little bit kind of obliquely in our first Breath of the Wild episode, but it's cropped up several times over the course of us recording this show, is the belief that a lot of people have that that Breath of the Wild is a amazing game. It is a fantastically designed and incredibly fun video game. But they don't necessarily believe that it qualifies as a Zelda game in the purest sense. Like, I mean, obviously it's got the name on the box, right? But can you accurately call it a Zelda game? Like, if you're going into it expecting like big Zelda vibes and feels, do you get that from Breath of the Wild? And you know, Matt and I have kind of mentioned that once or twice, and I'm curious to see where he lands with it as we kind of go through this season and he kind of replays it with a critical perspective. But that's going to be hard to do, I think, just because of what you're talking about, Max, where the main argument for this being the most, for Breath of the Wild being the purest possible interpretation of the original Zelda design philosophy is that it's kind of making good on a lot of the promises that The Legend of Zelda made when it came out in the 80s. And, you know, obviously, like, Matt and I, neither of us have played The Legend of Zelda. I'm familiar with like the parallels, but so, yeah, I do wonder how many people have that opinion who are kind of removing the original Legend of Zelda from the equation, because I think that's a big part of the argument.
Yeah.
So I like that. That's the hard part about defining. So it all boils down to, like, how do you define the Zelda series? and like what is the key component or key components that make a Zelda game a Zelda game, and what is it that makes Zelda unique among the gaming sphere? Because I think most people can agree that the Zelda series as a whole is unique in the gaming sphere. It has had such high cultural impact. It is beloved by no matter what you play. If you're an Xbox or a Sony or a Nintendo fanboy, you can universally agree that the Legend of Zelda series, whether you personally like it or not, is a fantastic video game series, just like objectively speaking. So like when it boils down to it, what makes a Zelda game a Zelda game? And I know I think the most compelling argument that you've made, Max, is the quote from Eiji Onuma himself, who said Zelda is a hiking simulator, right? Like
Miyamoto. I'm sorry. That's a Miyamoto quote.
Miyamoto is, you know, Zelda is about hiking. And like, man, it's hard to argue with Miyamoto. He kind of made it. He knows what he's going for, right? But like at the same time, as the consumer of the product, right, when I approach a Zelda game, I'm not approaching it as a hiking game. I'm approaching it as a dungeon game, as a exploration, and as a challenging experience for combat and critical thinking and puzzle solving. And so like just the experience that people are looking for from Zelda, I think drives their definition of whether or not the topic of our conversation in general, whether or not top down versus 3D, as well as where Breath of the Wild falls and all of that, is what are you approaching the series for as the consumer?
I actually don't want to give Miyamoto too much credit. He gets a lot of credit because his name is on top, right? But like I've been spending a lot of time digging into the history of the series, like which designers made which decisions, what is the result of, you know, Onuma's influence versus Koizumi's influence versus Miyamoto's influence. And there's like, you can find a lot of places in like interviews where they're like, oh yeah, I had to like sneak this past Miyamoto. And it's like something that is deeply meaningful to me as a player. And it's like, oh, this, Miyamoto was like pushing against this thing. Like storytelling. Miyamoto doesn't really like storytelling. And there's, you can kind of think Yoshiaki Koizumi for getting a lot of story into Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, Majora's Mask, to a lesser extent, Ocarina of Time. Like, there's a lot of Zelda is kind of this stew of influences from people who are just don't get quite the name recognition that Miyamoto gets.
This seems like a really good time to nudge you to plug your side gig, as it's very relevant to what we're kind of talking about right now.
Yes.
If it's in a place in which you want
to. Absolutely. If you want to know more about what I was just talking about, go to HyruleInterviews.com. I've been building a database of every interview I can find of any member of the Zelda team. You know, it's archival work. It's trying to preserve history, make sure there's duplicate copies of interviews. But it's also just me being super curious myself and wanting to learn more about this stuff. Because I want to know, like, what caused these favorite games of mine to be what they are. I have a database of interviews, and I have a big database of quotes that I've been pulling out of those interviews. And you can kind of search by topic, and you can click on somebody's name and see all the interviews that person has been in. It's definitely not a complete database. It probably never will be, but it's already the biggest database of Zelda interviews on the internet. So check it out.
I don't want to get too far off of the main topic, but have you kind of discovered anything in the process of like assembling content for that site that you were previously not like privy to? It's just something really cool that you found while you were putting stuff together for it.
There's been so many things trying to think of what I could pull out. The biggest takeaway for me has been getting just this much more detailed understanding of who the major creative influences have been. Like, did you know that the last time Miyamoto was the game director for a Zelda game was Zelda 1?
And he's just been in an executive producer role.
He's been in what they would call a producer role, which in Japan is closer to what we would call a creative director. The titles are definitely not one-to-one. And the last time he was in a producer role was like The Wind Waker, I think. And ever since the Wind Waker, every game since has been Eiji Aonuma in what you would call the franchise creative director role. But there's also this whole slew of other people who've had director titles, which is kind of someone who's more in the trenches making decisions about how the game's going to be. So there's this whole cast of characters behind the series that you don't get to hear about too often that have had a huge impact on all these games.
Do you feel like there's a difference, any appreciable difference in the philosophy of design in Zelda games from the Miyamoto era to the Aonuma era?
Yes. And I think that's actually crucial to what we're talking about here, because those coincide in a lot of ways with the 2D versus 3D split.
Because the majority of the titles that we're trotting out in favor of 3D as a format for Zelda come post Wind Waker, right? Yep. Like, obviously there's Breath of the Wild, but once you get past Wind Waker, you're really getting into like a much more narrative heavy, set piece driven style of Zelda game, right?
So from what I can tell, I mean, Miyamoto is the guy who's like, Zelda is about hiking, right? That's his thing. He was inspired as a kid by finding a cave while exploring the countryside around his home and finding a lake in the mountains. And it was all about that sense of discovery he felt as a child while hiking. And then you bring in like Yoshiaki Koizumi, who he kind of sort of started with Link to the Past, really started with Link's Awakening. He came in because he wanted to be a storyteller. He became a game dev because he wanted to tell stories. And you can kind of see, like, Link to the Past had barely any story in it. Like, there wasn't a plot. Characters weren't having character arcs in that game, really. There's some implied stuff, basically. And then
we mentioned that multiple times.
And then bam, you get to Link's Awakening, and suddenly, like, there's Marin, there's all these quirky ass characters everywhere. And that's like, that's all Koizumi. And then you get to the first few 3D games. Majora's Mask was Miyamoto was almost completely hands off Majora's Mask. He basically was like, I want you all to make Yura Zelda, which was like the second quest for Ocarina of Time. And the team didn't want to, they weren't excited about it. So instead, Koizumi and Aonuma pitched that they wanted to make a new game. And Nintendo was like, if you can do it in a year, we'll let you do this.
Dang.
But, so those two were the co-leads essentially of Majora's Mask. And like, you look at that game. That game is so different from Ocarina of Time. It is all about this weird wonderland. It's all about characters and storytelling, weird shades of gray.
It's definitely a very strange exercise in like, can you throw all the pieces, like can you disassemble a puzzle completely, mix up the pieces, and make something completely different with the main components, you know? Because like, there's almost nothing in Majora's Mask that, at least from an asset standpoint, that didn't originate in Ocarina of Time. Like, obviously scenery and geography and stuff is different. Like, I'm not saying they did nothing new for the game, but right, like, they literally just pulled apart Ocarina of Time and said, what can we make with this? And the result is appreciably different, like you're saying.
And then Aonuma takes over after that, basically. Like, Miyamoto was involved with Wind Waker, but it was at that point it was transitioning to Aonuma being in charge.
I do think so. You are talking though, like, so the difference between A Link to the Past and Link's Awakening, I mean, you know, you even mentioned it, those two are very different games from one another, especially in terms of narrative and story and character arc, but they are also the two games that came out closest together. It's actually a very big difference in the way that those sorts of things are handled, that happened very quickly. And I'm kind of curious, like, what the impetus for that could even have been, you know?
Link's Awakening also did not involve Miyamoto almost at all. Isn't it weird that the two games that didn't involve Miyamoto from the Miyamoto era were Link's Awakening and Majora's Mask?
They're the most character-driven games of that era, like, by far, because, I mean, when you look at the character development from between Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask is entirely about this ensemble of characters, much like Link's Awakening was about the ensemble of characters on Koholint Island. And yeah. now instead of Koholint Island, we're investing in the land of Termina and all of the various people around there. So I can definitely see the relationship there and how they are similar in that way, just, you know, focusing in on on the people that inhabit this weird world.
Look, I'm not willing to say that correlation 100% equals causation, but but it is an intriguing line to draw, isn't it? You know, it's certainly suggestive of a very particular approach on Miyamoto's style.
I know you're about to realign us back on topic, but I'm going to take us a little bit further off topic for a second here, which is there is famously a they would call it an append the table moment with Twilight Princess's development, where Miyamoto was pretty hands off for a very long time. At that point, he was like the general producer of creative or something at Nintendo. Like, he was just in charge of all games.
he's just the big boss.
So there was a version of Twilight Princess that was mostly driven by Aonuma as the producer that we never got to see because Miyamoto came in and was like, no, we're going to do it differently, and he took it in a different direction. And I've always been like, what would that version have been like?
I mean, that is definitely strange to think about, just because I would consider Twilight Princess to have a lot of conventions that I associate more with the Aonuma, right? You know, class of Zelda game.
It's like, it's very story driven. It is
and heavily reliant on the supporting cast of characters to draw you emotionally into the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fascinating. I would love for I don't know, something to get unearthed about that at some point where it's like, oh, hey, check out this design document that's been recently discovered that details Aonuma, like the Aonuma cut. Release the Aonuma cut of Twilight Princess, right? That'd be fascinating. Let's bring it back to the top-down versus 3D conversation. And we've kind of covered a lot of that ground in this. It wasn't even necessarily a rabbit trail because it was very applicable to what we're kind of trying to tackle here. But I want to ask each of you, So 2D and 3D, if you're approaching a 2D game, a 2D Zelda game, and then a 3D Zelda game, what do you consider to be a hallmark of each of those? Like, what can a 2D Zelda game not do without, in your opinion? And what can a 3D Zelda game not do without, in your opinion? Matt, you go first.
I think a 2D Zelda game cannot do without the Metroid style of progression. And I call it that because I don't remember what the technical term is, where you have to unlock certain areas of the map using new items that you get throughout the game. So like when I think of that, I think specifically like Koholint Island, where you have to get the power gauntlets to leave the immediate area and the beach, and you have to get the hook shot to cross over the broken bridge. Like that. So I think that is one of the primary hallmarks of basic map traversal in top-down Zelda games that it has to have to be a successful top-down Zelda.
And 3D?
For 3D, I would say that's kind of harder. Maybe a more fleshed-out combat system, whereas top-down Zeldas are hack and slash, obviously, but 3D Zeldas rely a little bit more on, at the very least, timing and maneuvering and occasional item usage. That's kind of a... I'll probably come up with a better answer while the two of you go, but that's the first one that pops to the top of my mind.
Cool. Max, 2D and then 3D.
Yeah, can you restate the question?
Yeah, so... What is a design component? What's a component of a 2D Zelda game that you feel like is endemic to top-down Zelda design? Like something that you consider to be essential to the identity of that style of game. And then same for 3D.
Yeah. So one of the things I think about when I think of 2D Zelda games that is very different from 3D Zelda games is the overlap between exploration play and combat. or action gameplay. Those two things feel like very different modes in a 3D Zelda game. Like they're you kind of you're either fighting a thing and then you're Z targeting and you're circling around it, and if you're in Breath of the Wild, you're, you know, maybe looking at how you can burn the grass or something, but your attention is fully on the monster in front of you. In a literal sense, your camera is on the monster in front of you. You're not looking at the environment otherwise. But in a 2D Zelda game, you have full view of the environment at a 360 all around you. You see everything that is relevant to you. There's never anything coming from off screen. And you can always see the action elements and the puzzle elements that are on the screen all at once. So that leads to this kind of blending of those two, where there's kind of this, you might turn to the side and swipe your sword, which you probably do a lot faster in a 2D Zelda game. It's like quick button presses. You swipe, swipe, swipe. You know, maybe you'll kill a Keese or something, and then you'll go press a switch, and then a Stalfos will come from behind you and you'll turn around and kill that. So there's kind of faster paced and more fluid integration of those two game styles in 2D Zelda games.
And then what about 3D? What do you think is something that is essential to the feel of a 3D Zelda game?
3D games are, the 3D Zelda games are really good at getting you to you know, stop and smell the flowers. I was talking about how 2D games are fast paced and they combine the combat and the puzzle solving and the environments you're in. 3D Zelda games have a lot more negative space. There's a lot more time spent traveling without engaging in combat. There's a lot more time spent looking around. Like you may be literally pressing, you know, C up to stop moving and look around with your camera if you're playing like Ocarina of Time. If you're playing Breath of the Wild, you're kind of going to the top of mountains and explicitly doing that with the goal of looking around as an action you're doing. You can literally see far away in a 3D Zelda game, and you can't in a 2D Zelda game. You can never see far away at all in a 2D Zelda game. So in a lot of ways, 3D Zelda games allow you to stop and smell the flowers that 2D Zelda games just don't really have.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I would agree with all of that. I think for me, to answer my own question, I think for the top-down Zelda games, the way that you approach puzzle solving is so necessarily different. You know, there are times where this is done similarly between the top-down and 3D games, but for the most part, in a 3D or in a top-down Zelda game, you kind of are able to get the lay of the land in terms of a specific puzzle that you're up against, like especially in the games where you're taking a dungeon, for instance, like a tile at a time. In a lot of instances, you will be obviously you're seeing the level that you're on, and then you're seeing stuff that you're disconnected from physically at the moment. Like in a 3D game, you wouldn't be able to see any of these other things because they're behind a wall or they're on a different level of elevation or whatever. But in a top-down Zelda game, you're seeing your own puzzle and then possibly several other puzzles all at the same time, right? And so it's doing this interesting thing where it's like it's showing you the parameters of the world and the problems that you're trying to solve, and it's kind of up to you to figure out, like, can I solve this right now, or is this thing over here something that I have to come back to? Like, you're just given so much more information, which is kind of what you're talking about in terms of like combat perspectives and such. Mm-hmm. Max, and I think to take that and apply it more directly to the puzzle solving, I think that the way that those things are handled in top-down Zelda games is very different than how they are in the 3D titles. And sometimes they are, like, there will be times in 3D Zelda games where it's like you are able to maybe see outside of the room that you're in, and it gives you context clues for like maybe a switch that's behind a chain link or something, and you've got to get over to that and hit it to do something in the room that you're in currently, you know. But for the most part, you know, for the most part, it's very much just about in 3D games, what can you see in the room that you're currently in? Like, what enemies are there? What can you uncover? What switches can you hit? There's not too much information that's not applicable to you in that very moment that's kind of given to you. So, so that's my answer for top downs. For 3D Zelda games, I would say that the only thing I really consider to be a constant for them is the way in which they present story and narrative. And it is done differently between a whole lot of different 3D Zelda games, but the way that You know, I just kind of expect a certain amount of like framing and cinematography related to the rollout of story, you know? And I do think that that lends a very different feel to those games. And it's one of the things that you react to very positively, I know, Matt, in 3D Zelda games versus top downs. Yeah. Matt, is it fair to say that you feel like 3D Zelda games are a much better vehicle for grand storytelling than
top-down absolutely. Zelda I games think, are? I think that there is just something to be said for the cinematic cuts that can be done in the 3D Zelda. I think, you know, Minish Cap actually has a couple decent cinematic story dumps throughout the game, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time since I played Minish Cap, but, you know, it's I think has more story than most of the other 2D games that I've personally played. But there's just something to be said for that cinematography, the camera angles that can follow during, you know, Ghirahim's monologues, or the just the emotion that can be conveyed through characters' faces that you don't really get in the top downs. And, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily bad for a top down at all. It's a different vehicle. It's a different method of delivery has more nuance and more emotional impact to me personally. I don't like to project my inference for what the story is supposed to be onto a game, especially the first time I'm playing it. You know, if I'm replaying, then, you know, I'm fine to project and write my own story in my head, right? But like the first time I'm playing it,
you don't like to do too much of your own thinking.
That's not what I said. I said, yes. I don't want to imprint my expectations on the story of the game until I've replayed it a few times. And then I want to fill in the gaps for myself maybe. But like what I want the story that is supposed to be told to be told, right?
And I want to be a receptacle for the story to be poured into.
Exactly. Yeah.
I
can get on board with that.
I agree. I feel that way as well. I mean, as somebody who enjoys the top downs and 3Ds pretty equally, I think when I know kind of what I'm getting into in one versus the other, I tend to enjoy them pretty equally. Like obviously Link's Awakening may be kind of like not the best example to bring up because I feel like it did storytelling in top down better than really any of the other ones have, or at least more effectively, it's more emotionally affecting in my opinion. But, you know, knowing that I'm going to get into that whenever I play it, I'm able to kind of like fill in the gaps myself and bring a little bit of my own thoughts and feelings to the story that it's telling versus something like Skyward Sword, where it's like, you know, the direction and the music and everything is definitely trying to get you to feel a very specific way. And you're just kind of along for the ride, you know? So I think that that's fair. Max, I know you and I have kind of talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but I think you're pretty much aligned with what we're saying here, that the 3D Zelda games are a bit more adept or at least are a bit more traditionally suited to being vehicles for storytelling the way we think about it in AAA games.
I think that has definitely been true historically with the series. So a lot of what we call story in Zelda games is character driven stuff. It's about like, how does this character act and feel? And how does that make you as the player act and feel? And Zelda games are never driven by some complex like political plot or anything like that, right? It's always about like, here's what you're feeling about this character that's in front of you right now. And 3D games, the 3D Zelda games are just better at that. They have more tools in their toolbox to build your rapport with the characters in front of you. The most obvious of which is you get close-ups of their face, right? Like, they feel like they're standing in front of you. You can see their smaller... you can see their emotions coming through and how they're animated and how they move and the way they exist in the space in ways that it's hard to come through in the 2D games. Part of that is also the eras, right? Like most of what we think of as the flagship 2D games are also older. And if they were to make them nowadays, they would be able to get more storytelling and character in them than they did back then. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be less probably than they can do in the 3D games.
So this is a perfect segue into what I want to talk about next, because this is a topic that I'm very curious about. And we, you know, we don't know a whole lot about the future of Zelda as a series. We know that we are getting Breath of the Wild 2, whatever that entails, right? We don't know all that much about it, really, but I think it's pretty safe to say that it's going to follow a lot of the conventions that were established in Breath of the Wild. And I'm sure we'll get more re-releases of older games, you know, like I'm sure that wheel's going to keep on turning forever, and that's totally fine. But what we don't know is what the future holds in terms of the top-down convention of Zelda title. It doesn't get talked about a lot. We haven't had a new entry in the series that followed that mode of design since A Link Between Worlds, which I believe was in like 2013. Yeah. So it's been quite a while. Yeah. And I, you know, it like with Mario, you know, there's a pretty clear delineation where they are still developing what we consider to be classic side scrolling Mario games. And there are people working on like the Mario Odysseys of the world, right? They're doing both. But for Zelda, it doesn't seem at all like they're willing to comment on whether or not that's going to be the case. But I do feel like if they were to continue and make new top-down Zelda experiences, there's a lot of room to kind of mix and match some of the things we're talking about in terms of character building, you know, story delivery and whatnot with the top-down experience. So I want to ask you, Max, for starters, where do you think top-down, like, do you think there's a future for top-down Zelda?
Yes. The short answer is yes. We will definitely see top-down Zelda again someday. My bet, so I'll put this out there into the world. My bet is that there's this company called Grezzo. They're the developer that they did the remakes of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, and Link's Awakening. And they have also, other than Zelda, they have made a top-down action game before. As an original title. I bet that the next time we see a top-down Zelda game, it will be an original game by Grezzo. And that Nintendo will entrust them with a new Zelda game for the first time.
Really? You think they'll entrust their IP to another developer like they did with Capcom for Minish Cap?
Good on you for remembering that, Matt, because I was just going to bring that up as like,
yeah. The only one that I know of is Capcom with Minish Cap. I don't know if they've done it with any of the other ones, but
the Oracle games were Capcom as well.
I thought Capcom was the only company. Yeah. I just couldn't remember if they'd done anything other than Minish Cap.
Yeah, Nintendo has a weird history with this, actually. Going back to like the NES days, they've always done this thing where they help smaller non-Nintendo companies establish themselves by like they literally would fund the startup of a bunch of companies back in the day as some like tax dodge scheme or something. But like the big news today is that Nintendo bought SRD, which is literally just a company of a bunch of programmers that are located in Nintendo's building and have worked on the original Zelda and Mario games and like have just been the programmers for all of Nintendo's games for years. So when the news broke today that they got bought out, everyone was like, what? That wasn't already part of Nintendo? That was a separate company? Grezzo is kind of the same way. Nintendo's grooming them to give them more and more responsibility.
And you think that because obviously the games you mentioned, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, while they both had some very appreciable upgrades over their N64 versions, they were still very much like, putting aside visual fidelity and one or two small enhancements, just ports of those original games, right? And then you have Link's Awakening, where there is a lot more creative license and creative freedom on Grezzo's part in the translation of that game.
I think they showed that they got it with Link's Awakening remake. Like, they definitely grokked the essence of that game and, like, went above and beyond just being a remake to do creative touches that emphasized how the strengths of the original game. I'm guessing that earned them a lot of trust from Nintendo.
Gotcha. I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense. And obviously, I would hate to think that I would love to think that you're right. And I would hate to think that we never get another top-down Zelda game. I am kind of wondering now, assuming that we do get another one at some point, do you feel like there's a lot of room to kind of make up some ground in terms of what a top-down Zelda game is able to do from a, like a story and narrative standpoint? I mean, I'm thinking about examples outside of Zelda with games that have somewhat of a top-down perspective that, you know, even like Pokemon games 10 years ago were already starting to do like, you know, oh, let's do like some in-engine cutscenes, you know, and it was rudimentary, but like, you know, game design has even come a long way since that. So
yeah, I mean, so the most obvious one is they're all 3D now, even when they're top down. They can totally just do the same, the exact same kind of cutscenes that they do in the 3D Zelda games. Art style, you know, allowing, of course. So that's one thing. I mean, voice acting is another, right? There's no reason the top-down game can't have voice acting. If they think that that was an effective storytelling tool in Breath of the Wild, which there's some mixed opinions on, but they probably consider it a success. The second one, of course, is in a similar vein. There's nothing stopping them from doing voice acting in 2D, or in top-down Zelda games, the same way they did in Breath of the Wild, which there's some mixed opinions on whether that was successful or not, but I think overall it probably was successful. And they're going to keep doing it, and they could do that with 2D games too if they wanted. But there's also a bunch of stuff like simply how you write stories and what you prioritize when you're writing a story that they have never chosen to do with a 2D Zelda game, but there's nothing stopping them from it. They could just be like, we're going to make a good, we're going to put effort into a plot, a character-driven plot in a 2D Zelda game to the same extent that we do in a 3D game, and they. And then they're just going to make different decisions about how they write their story and how often they're telling you story elements within the game.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that if we were to get a modernized take on top-down Zelda, do you think that we would also see enhancements to the formula that include things like maybe a more streamlined combat system, like maybe a deeper pool of like, I don't know, like movement and combat abilities? I mean, obviously, like we take Z targeting or L targeting or whatever you want to call it for granted in 3D Zelda games. And in the past, that's mostly just been because we've got more buttons and extra like viewable axes on 3D Zelda games. But like, you know, I mean, lots of games that kind of subscribe to a more top down sensibility that have released in recent years have got similar like lock on mechanics and have got deeper combat systems.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the direction they will go. And the reason is that I think that stuff like Z targeting in the 3D games was because they felt like they had no choice. It makes the games a lot more complicated, harder to learn to play, harder to play effectively. There's like, you have to juggle cameras and how the camera is controlled versus your character facing is different when you're Z targeting versus not Z targeting. And I think they view it as a necessary evil. It comes through occasionally in like interviews from the Ocarina of Time era. Where they're like, they're struggling to solve these gameplay readability problems and like, oh, how do players tell where they are in space and how do they know how to line up with enemies? And it's like, Z targeting is a solution to that problem rather than a goal of it in of itself.
Gotcha. So it's a means by which you overcome a necessary evil of designing in a full 3D world, right?
There is one example of a 2D Zelda game that has a lot more in-depth combat mechanics, which is the Minish Cap. Like you would find Swordmasters, if my memory serves, it's been a long time since I played Minish Cap, but
you
would find these like Swordmasters around, and they would teach you sword techniques.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of similar to what they do at what the skeleton Link does in Twilight Princess. The end of Minish Cap, you have all these like fancy like charge attacks and like dodge rolls, and it worked pretty good. So
yeah, it's definitely a lot different than, I mean, even in like a Link Between Worlds, you're pretty limited to just like spin attack, slash, and then like a Pegasus boots dash, you know? Yeah.
And you can't even hit anything on a horizontal axis. It's just straight in front, straight to the side.
Well, in fairness, as the top-down game lineage kind of like goes further and further or gets closer to present, the radius in which you can hit something with a single sword slash gets bigger and bigger. Like that was by far my least favorite thing about A Link to the Past is just like, man, I really feel like
these slides should be hitting more than they are. You know? Yeah, like, no, that was constantly annoying.
There is an interesting thing to think about here, though, which is like the pacing of combat versus movement. I talked earlier about how like the 2D games are a lot, they integrate the two a lot more. And generally speaking, like combat is this shorter experience. And in 3D games, because of the way like you can see far away and there's a lot more to combat because you have to like move the camera and approach the combatants. And they I think that it lends itself better in the 3D games to having kind of this longer back and forth combat with like a single combatant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have blocks, you have dodges, you have parries, and there's like the camera's focused on this one combatant the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think in a 2D game, you don't need to have that singular longer term focus on a single enemy like you do in the 3D.
Yeah, there's a lot more mob style fights in top down Zeldas than there are in 3D Zeldas. Like, I think there are some noticeable exceptions, you know, like in Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild, you do still get some mob style fights, but like Ocarina of Time, it's mostly one or two enemies, you know, unless you're just like some keys that are flying around, but like it's mostly, you know, one at a time, almost duel style, duel, D-U-E-L, style fighting.
Well, my question is, why can't it be both? Like, so this kind of comes back to a game that Matt and I very recently got finished playing. I'm not sure if you played it, Max. So Metroid Dread, little gem of a
fantastic game.
That
I did play it.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I do not have, I really don't have any history with Metroid as a series. I've beaten Super Metroid and now Metroid Dread. And I appreciated Super Metroid well enough, I guess, didn't love it. And Metroid Dread just like knocked my socks off. Obviously, it's a side scrolling game, but still limited to one visual access. So it's relevant to this conversation. So let's talk top down instead of side scrolling. There are still a lot of ways in which, again, remembering that now we have got more buttons, you know, that you could have areas where you are more singularly focused on one enemy who you are interacting with in a more tactical way via whatever parries, dodges, who knows. And then also other areas where you can have a little bit more enemy density. I mean, do you think there's room for both, Max?
I do think there's room for both. You could make a game that does both. I think that in order to make a game where combat against a single enemy for extended period of time feels good, you kind of have to pump a lot of your design bandwidth into making that combat feel good. Like, you need to be like, okay, this is going to have an awesome combat system, and we're gonna make sure this is a priority from beginning to end. And I don't think that's a thing they are going to choose to prioritize in most 2D Zelda games, top-down Zelda games. But I do think it's possible. Trying to think what the closest to that would be in Zelda right now.
I mean, obviously, I think the closest analog to what we're talking about at the moment is the way that you can do like flurry rushes and shield parries and stuff in Breath of the Wild. Now, obviously, that's, you know, completely divorced from the top down argument. Right. That's a 3D title. Right. But I would say that there are actions that you do in Metroid Dread. Again, we're limited to one visual access at one visual axis. And there are actions that are being taken in combat that are very similar to that. Dodges, parries, that kind of thing.
So here's an idea. 2D Zelda, top down Zelda games have historically always had a fixed camera distance. Camera is never doing any zooming in or zooming out, except for Swords Adventures, which I know you two haven't played yet, but we will play.
Yeah, well, we've got a plan to remedy that.
Four Swords Adventures does this thing where it's almost like the camera in a Smash Brothers map, where as two players walk farther away from each other, the camera will zoom out to encompass like a huge area, way, way bigger than you see in a typical one player 2D, a top down Zelda game. And I do think there's room to have bigger battles or battles against a bigger enemy. If they give you a lot more movement options and pull the camera out. You see that in stuff like a lot of like hectic combat focused top-down games do stuff like that. Like, what should we call it? It's like a roguelike bullet hell game where you play as like a fetus or something. It's not a very appealing art style to me, but they do stuff like that. And what's the post-apocalyptic game with the Metroidvania-esque exploration that I know you like it, Lyndon?
Hyper Light Drifter.
Hyper Light Drifter does that.
Yeah.
And like, think back to like the bosses in that game. They kind of have these big bosses with big sweeping attacks and big moves in a big arena. They basically let it feel, it feels okay because they pull the camera out for all that.
That's a fair observation. Yeah. I mean, I guess a lot of these are things that have been done in games that like, I think we would consider them Zelda likes. And, they're kind of decisions that have been made to try and differentiate them from the source material a little bit. I don't want to make it sound like these people are like, being unoriginal in their design philosophy, because that's not true. That's not what I'm trying to say. But like, I do think a lot of these things are definitely, Zelda doesn't necessarily need them. But I would love to see them kind of maybe diversify, add some complexity to the moment-to-moment gameplay as the top-down series of Zelda games goes forward.
I'm kind of curious dig in. Sorry, I know you're about to move on, but I'm curious, as a player, when you're playing a top-down Zelda game, like, what do you feel is missing for you? Or what do you wish you were having that makes you say that?
For me, the main one is really combat. Like, I love the exploration. I love the puzzle solving. I love the sandbox, the item collection, all that. It's all really fun, and I wouldn't change any of it. But I would say that I haven't felt particularly challenged by combat in a top-down Zelda game in a way that I think is emotionally or intellectually stimulating, right? Like, a lot of it is just knowing where to be at the right time and when to hit the button, or when to use a particular item. And I do think that there's an extra depth that can be added. I'm not looking for top-down Zelda to become like Souls level hard in terms of its like combat interactions. Yeah. But I do think that I think that it is fun to kind of shake it up a little bit and to add a little bit of, for lack of a better term, combat puzzle solving elements to the, to that element.
Mechanics-based combat.
Yeah, you want more than just there's a hitbox walking around, and if it touches you, you take damage.
Yes.
And if your sword touches it, it takes damage.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a fair criticism. That's a fair thing to look for.
And I can't like stress this enough. I don't need that in my top-down Zelda. Like, I will enjoy any new entry in the series that is this top-down, regardless of whether or not it has that. It's just a like would be nice to have kind of thing. With that in mind, I do want to move on to our last set of questions. So as we look to the future of both the top-down potentially Zelda games and 3D Zelda games, I want to get a would be nice to have from each of you about those going forward. Like, what would you, if you like, give it a wish list kind of thing, what would you love to see added as the series goes forward? Let's go ahead and start off with 3D, because we know what we're getting next there, and it's Breath of the Wild 2. Max, I'm going to go with you first. Oh, Matt, you can go first. I'm sorry. I love you. I want you to be able to speak.
I want dungeons back in my Zelda. I want real dungeons, like more than just shrines. I want the full puzzle solving, boss fighting, expansive dungeon experience back in my Zelda. That is just my primary gripe with Breath of the Wild. And I know that, and look, obviously we're going to talk about this in the course of the actual season. I love Breath of the Wild and I think it does a lot of things great, but there's just that it's a missing piece that almost feels like you took, I don't want to say you took the soul out of Zelda, but like, it's just such a massive gap for me that I'm just like, man, it's really, it hurts me a little bit inside whenever I go into a divine beast and I'm like, divine beast time. It's just really just another shrine with a boss. It's fine.
Well, good to know how you feel about that, man.
Just saying, that's what I want. I want dungeons back in my Zelda.
There's your headline. Matt Willoughby, Breath of the Wild takes the soul out of Zelda.
Not what I said. This is not what I said.
Oh, man. Max, what would you love to see added to 3D Zelda games going forward, Breath of the Wild 2 specifically?
Okay, so I want to see... This is a hard question for me because the Breath of the Wild was like... I thought it was just the best game ever made. I have a hard time thinking of what I want added to it because it's, in my mind, it was nearly perfect. I would love to see... I want to have more agency over the environment around me. And what I mean by that is I want to be able to do stuff like change the weather or change the seasons or take bigger actions within that environment. Like I want to be able to like swim fast and not piddly dink tiny speed like you get in Breath of the Wild. Like I kind of want to feel like I'm a little bit more powerful within that world, but it's going to be hard to balance that with the feelings that Breath of the Wild has when you're kind of feeling the solitude of the world. So but maybe that's a bad direction. We'll see. And I would love to see more dungeons as well. But when I say more dungeons, I want spaces that are like Hyrule Castle was.
Oh, for sure.
I want more Hyrule castles. And I especially want them to be underground. I want like big underground. I want an underworld. And I want an underworld back. But I want to feel like I'm exploring it. Yeah. Skyworld.
If they fill it up, unlike Skyloft.
Yeah.
Unlike Skyloft.
Important qualifier there. Very important.
Those are the directions my brain goes.
Okay. All right. So for me, I think my biggest one is that I would love to have select items within the game, not even necessarily combat items. I'm not talking swords and shields and whatnot, but I would love to get back a little bit of the pride of collection you get from certain specific key items in older Zelda games. They don't have to like change the way that you interact with like enemy combat in the game, but I would love to be able to get like, I don't know, like the hook shot. I mean, I know the hook shot specifically is a really tough one to balance in Breath of the Wild because now you're getting into like, how does traversal work and whatnot? But I'm talking about like, I don't know, some of the big key items you get from past Zelda games that like in Breath of the Wild, basically everything that you have aside from your paraglider and your runes is disposable, you know? And you don't form much of an emotional attachment with any of it. And I know that sounds like a dig against the weapon durability system, and that's kind of not what I'm trying to litigate right now, because I like weapon durability in Breath of the Wild. Matt does not like weapon durability in Breath of the Wild. But I do miss forming emotional attachments with permanently existing stuff in my inventory that feels cool to acquire. I guess that's kind of
so. I think a good example of that would be like the musical instruments you can collect throughout some other Zelda games, right? Like especially I'm thinking Ocarina of Time, and Majora's Mask, Skyward Sword, the Wind Waker, like all of these. I mean, granted, they do things for you, but like they could, it's like bridging your thing with Max's thing. Like, what if we got, you know, an instrument that helped us to change the weather, change the direction of the wind, like it did in Wind Waker, like things that helped you influence the world around you as a collectible item.
You think our Breath of the Wild needs a little more Ocarina of Time, Matt?
I think our Breath of the Wild needs a little more Wind Waker.
Oh, I love Wind Waker. Good one. Yeah, thinking back to I was a kid playing Zelda games, I would spend hours and hours drawing the items from those games. Mm. I would like put the Link to the Past manual down in front of me and I would draw all the gear. And I did that up. And then eventually when I got a little older, I would start making up my own items. Like I drew swords and gave them backstories and stuff.
We, Lyndon and I actually carved a few master swords with both sets of our grandparents. Yeah. We actually multiple times we went and our granddad was woodworking was one of his hobbies. So we took a stenciled out piece of plywood to him and said, "Hey, can you like cut this for us and into this shape?" And we made a wooden master sword. We did that a couple of times. So yeah,
that happened. Well, obviously the Master Sword's probably never going away, but yeah, I mean, so some other items I think I would love to see and form a little bit of permanent emotional attachment with. Let's move on to top down. So Max, I'm gonna let you go first on that one. Assuming we ever get another top down Zelda game, which you're pretty confident that we are going to, what is on your wish list of something you'd like to see added to it that hasn't been done in those previously?
Oh, that may be even harder. They talk a lot in interviews about how like they don't want to just make Nintendo doesn't like just making the same game over again. They don't want to be like, let's make this game, but more. They don't like that. They always want to make sure they have some sort of foundational idea or direction for their new stuff, at least for their main Zelda and Mario titles. Sometimes it does feel like they just rehash stuff in other franchises, but like they there's all these stories about how A Link Between Worlds kind of like languished with this tiny, tiny team that couldn't find the kernel of an idea for years before they stumbled upon this idea and prototyped it. And like, they were like, "Oh, this is cool." And then it took off. And I kind of run into the same problem right now because I'm like, where can they take 2D Zelda games? Where does this even go from here that isn't just more of the same? And I don't necessarily have a great answer. I do think that there's something interesting with the like exploring how to showcase scale in 2D more by like experimenting with like camera zooming in and out. I would also be interested in seeing more like crazy Alice in Wonderland, bizarro like stories and landscapes like Link's Awakening had, which I think, yeah. I think 2D is like well suited to that because it's like, it's kind of this minimalistic thing, storytelling style that they do in Link's Awakening that works really well. And I think that pairs well with just the capabilities of the 2D storytelling.
Gotcha. So those are I think
not very concrete ideas, but that's kind of where my brain goes.
No. That's good. That's good. Matt, what about yourself?
I mean, for top downs, I think what I would like to see is more fleshed out story and characterization. I think that there is a way and a medium with which to do that. And I actually think Metroid Dread is another very good example of a well-told story game. I liked the story. I thought that it was compelling and interesting. I wouldn't say that the characterization was anything special, obviously, but like it was a really, it had some of those like, oh, that's really cool moments for me.
It had cinematic moments, yeah. Certainly.
Maybe story is the wrong word for Metroid Dread. I don't know, but like, yeah, that's what I think is really. Aside, I don't want to take your combat thing, Lyndon, because really, if I had to totally say, I would say that a more fully fleshed out combat system is what I was missing. But I have a feeling that that's what you're going to say, so I don't want to steal that from you. But a more fleshed out way of storytelling and characterization for a top-down Zelda.
Yeah. Well, that's actually not what I'm going to say.
Dang it.
Mostly because I already said it and I don't want to double up. Like, I don't want to retread old ground here. So honestly, mine, though, is one that's not going to happen. At least I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen, especially if Max's prediction holds true and Grezzo is kind of going to be developing the next wave of top down Zelda titles. What I would like to see most is top down Zelda games that are comfortable experimenting with aesthetic and art style. I mean, and when I say that, I'm talking like something that is more out there than just like, what's the best way to put this? Like with A Link Between Worlds, for instance, you know, like the art style itself, I wouldn't say was too very distinctive. You know, it was all very like, it was all very kind of toyetic adjacent, and it didn't it looked fine. It was serviceable for what that game needed it to be, but I wouldn't say that it was like an achievement in art in Zelda.
Nobody's putting it on their like best looking Zelda game lists.
Right.
Yeah. And certainly not in the same way that you can say for like Wind Waker or even Minish Cap, you know, Minish Cap, which is I think like only like one of two 16-bit Zelda art styles, and they actually really pushed it quite a lot with Minish Cap. Like, it was a very pretty game.
Yeah.
And obviously Wind Waker, you know, controversial at the time, sure, but highly distinctive. And I think that art style has really held up well over the years. But yeah, I think I would love to see them mess around with just some very experimental art styles, even if the game itself is not experimental, just like kind of push what you're sort of doing with it visually. And I know that Link's Awakening's remaster did that just a little bit. Like, it did kind of take some steps in that direction.
It was a beautiful game.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying here, more than like, I don't want to say that I didn't think Link's Awakening's remaster was gorgeous, because it was amazing. It was perfect for what that game needed to be. But I would like to see a top down Zelda game that is a 2D Zelda game. Again, like give me some form of two dimensional graphics for my top down Zelda again, you know.
I wouldn't mind seeing Nintendo try to tackle like what is a unique new pixel art style or illustrative style, actually using 2D assets. That could be very interesting, whatever they would come up with.
Well, because I'm thinking about like there's two very recent example, or I say very recent, within the last decade, two very good examples of both of those things. One is the way that the modern Rayman games are done. You know, they have a very illustrative style that is very stylized and is gorgeous. That I think would something like that would work really well for top down Zelda. And then you've got the newer the Octopath Traveler style of the games.
HD 2D Squaresoft remake. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like you've got that classic sprite look that they're going for, but also you've got like, you know, you have not a perfect top down view. You kind of have an angled depth of field thing that they do. And I think it's a neat look. I don't know if that's necessarily perfect for Zelda, but something adjacent to that I would love to see them experiment with.
There's a lot of indie stuff out there that does amazing experimental 2D art styles. Like, there's so many well done styles out there. Lots of inspiration.
Yeah, what's that one? It was that came out last year. I never know how to pronounce it. It's either Gris or Grease or Gree. I don't think I ever heard how that was supposed to be pronounced, but that had to like kind of a very hand illustrated watercolor sort of style. And I don't know. All I'm saying is I know that that's way too experimental and like out there for them to ever do in a mainline Zelda game, but I would love to see them screw around with it just a little bit. So that's just me. And that's what I got on that.
I mean, those are all good answers. They should make a single game with us, all of our suggestions at once.
I agree completely.
Oh, there's no way that would be a garbage fire. <It's> like, let's just throw it all into a sack and see what comes out. Oh, God. Well, I think we're kind of about at the end of our time here, but I think we've like covered a lot of really good ground on this. This is obviously a very big topic, and a lot of people have very subjective opinions about it. I think we've been as objective as we possibly can. I mean, as much as you can be about something like this. But yeah, I mean, definitely a really fun conversation and nice to actually have a dedicated conversation about it. Cause like I said, Matt and I have just kind of skirted around this discussion many, many times.
You can cut this if you want, but I was going to ask, is it okay if I take a few minutes to talk about how amazing of an achievement it was when they went to 3D with Ocarina of Time?
No, yeah, no,
absolutely.
No,
absolutely. Please
go for it.
Okay.
Go
okay. So, prior to Ocarina of Time, nobody had done a good job, in my estimation. Maybe I'm forgetting some lesser-known game out there somewhere, but nobody had really done a good job of making a third-person 3D game with melee combat where you had to control your character's facing and the camera. Like, we'd had, like, first-person games in 3D, and we'd had... like vehicle based games where your camera was always pointed ahead. And we'd had Super Mario 64, which didn't have directional melee combat and it had super janky gameplay in a lot of ways.
But did have the kind of camera control you're talking about
there. And, but by the way, like everyone who worked on Super Mario 64 also worked in Ocarina of Time. Those are like almost total overlap between those teams in a lot of ways, which is interesting. Anyway, so Ocarina of Time broke a bunch of ground, and certainly nobody had done well to the extent of hitting Nintendo's polish bar. Nintendo was a company that cared a lot about its games being easy to play. Like, anyone should be able to play a Nintendo game. If you think back to, like, the early 90s, like, people's parents picked up, you know, Super Mario Brothers and whatnot just as easy as their kids did. But I know a lot of parents who dropped off of gaming once 3D games came out, because of the complexity of it. Unless they're the Hyrule Podcaster's mom.
mom. Yeah.
Anyway, so they were like, okay, how the hell do we do this? And there's a whole bunch of like stories where they had to iterate to try to figure out like, how do we solve this problem of making sure the player understands where their character is in relation to another character. Like an enemy they're fighting. And how do we solve this problem of like lining up your melee attacks with a character that's in front of you? And how do we solve the problem of like you're in a dungeon and there's a switch you need to hit and you just never happen to turn your camera in just the right way to see it.
Right.
And you just get like frustrated and lost. Whereas in a 2D game, you would always see it because it's right there. So it's always in your camera. Right. So they had all these like really fundamental problems about like how do you make a game work in 3D that nobody had solved yet. I don't want to say, you know, Ocarina of Time is underappreciated or anything. Everyone knows it's amazing, but the reason it's so amazing and the reason it was so groundbreaking is because they solved these kind of problems. Obviously, the big one is Z-targeting, right? That solved a lot of these problems of like, how do you line up your camera and how do you control camera and facing separately? What Z-targeting actually does is when you don't have Z-targeting active, you control your camera. Let's see. Sure, I had a pithy way to say this in the past. But basically, they change up whether you're controlling your facing or your camera. When you're Z-targeting, your facing and your camera are always one-to-one. But when you're not Z-targeting, they are separated.
Oh, gotcha. So when Z-targeting is active, you and your character and your camera are looking the same, like you're on the same, you're same locked at the same point. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how they solve stuff like, how do you know where you are in relation to a target? And how do you aim your melee attacks? And like every 3D game since then has had it. Modern games have like kind of more nuanced, modern, like subtle versions of it a lot of times, like auto targeting with your melee attacks and stuff, but they essentially still do it. They kind of had to make a bunch of sacrifices to solve these problems. They basically started making Ocarina of Time. They're like, wow, this game is hard. It's easy to get lost. Like, we're afraid people are going to bounce off this game because it's going to be too hard and too much friction and too many frustration points. And they couldn't really completely solve these readability problems. Like compared to like A Link to the Past or Link's Awakening, you just can't tell what's happening around you as well in Ocarina of Time as you could in those games.
Sure.
So they kind of like dialed down a bunch of stuff. Like they made combat easy. Like combat in Ocarina of Time is simple.
Yeah.
Like you can survive a lot of hits. There's really high margin of error. They only ever attack you with one character at a time. You can kind of just power through stuff. Fairies heal your whole health bar, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 8 or 10 hearts or something. It's not complete, but it might as well be.
Yeah. So like they made combat really easy. They introduced not only the first tutorials in the Zelda series, really, but some of the first ever like in-depth tutorialization that games had was in Ocarina of Time. Where there's like extended like tutorial sequences from characters and like all the spiels from Kapora Gebora. You know, that was an attempt for them to like try to fix this problem of it being too hard to get into.
Right. I mean, the trade off for that, though, especially in puzzle solving, is that there's just a whole lot less density of ways for you to interact with a puzzle in a 3D, especially in Ocarina of Time, than there was in like Link's Awakening, for instance. I mean, like you go into a room and generally speaking, there's a few enemies. There's maybe a door you have to raise and there's a switch that you have to interact with. And the primary friction comes from you, like you were saying, having to just visually locate said switch. Rather than anything else.
Yeah, a lot of rooms where you end up in Ocarina of Time, like you're just kind of, you're trying to figure out the room. Like, where are the things I need to interact with? How do I get to them? And those are like kind of lengthy, difficult things sometimes. Like the Forest Temple, for instance, in ways that they really aren't usually in the 2D Zelda games.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think fair to say, though, that like, For that first transitional moment, that first major transitional moment, it does retain, like, it is still identifiable as feeling like Zelda problem solving and
a
Zelda world, you know?
Yeah, and that was kind of where I was going to go to kind of finish this off is, like, if you try to think of how many IPs have successfully made a transition from being, like, a world-class 2D game to a world-class 3D game. Where they actually add an extra dimension to the gameplay, not just changing it from 2D sprites to 3D models.
Yeah.
Like there really aren't very many. And Zelda is one of the few that did it. And not only did they do it, but they basically invented third person action games.
I mean, one of the main examples I can really think of is just is Metroid, you know, the transition from like traditional Metroid to the Metroid Prime series, which is obviously completely different. But even that, like, I think that's a good example, but it has far less lineage than the Zelda series does, you know?
I mean, the other obvious example being Mario. We have our top-down Marios, you know, into Mario 64 and the gloriousness that it has existed between now and then. So,
well, and isn't it telling, though, that
all three of those are Nintendo? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like,
yeah, during the N64 era, there were a bunch of IPs that tried it. Mega Man did Mega Man Legends. Castlevania did Castlevania 64. And, like, most of them didn't land.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all I got on that topic.
Grand Theft Auto is another decent example, I guess, because it started as just a top-down game. But I think you can't even necessarily bring that up because, one, only the first game was ever like that. And every other game that came after it didn't even try to necessarily adhere to the things that that game laid out. You know, like Grand Theft Auto, Vice City and whatnot is not even trying to do anything sort of adjacent to Grand Theft Auto, the original, you know, so probably not even an applicable example. And I'm sorry I brought it up now.
How dare you? I did not play any of the pre 3D GTAs, so I can't comment there.
Yeah. No, good note to end it on. I mean, just kind of talking about the lineage from the top down to the 3D, the similarities that they share. I think definitely we will be talking a lot about, we'll be continuing this conversation in a fashion as we go forward with our Breath of the Wild season and talk about the ways in which it executes on the promise of the original Legend of Zelda. And, you know, the conversation of what we like about 3D versus top down is never very far away, especially as we get into whatever the next top down Zelda game we play, which I have a feeling is probably going to be Minish Cap, but who's to say? But it's going to be Minish Cap, right, Matt?
I mean, I certainly freaking hope so. Man,
you guys have better be careful not to front load all the best Zelda games. You don't want to save like your last five seasons to be like, you know, Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks and I don't know, what's the worst 3D Zelda game? Twilight Princess.
You already did Skyward Sword, so. Well, some of that's just so hard to control because, like, we have already said we're not going to play Spirit Tracks before we play Phantom Hourglass, for instance. Mm-hmm. And by that token, we also, like, people were not able to vote on Link Between Worlds before now because we wanted to play Link to the Past first. So some of this is just necessitated by, like, you know, we want to get relevant games played before we get to their sequels. But
that is fair. But I'll have you know, I'm always going to play for the worst Zelda game. I'm always going to vote for the worst Zelda game on the list every time you put a poll up. But it's good. For your own good. It's so that you don't have to end the series with a series of
with just a bunch of games that just drag. That's fair.
You don't want us to have to play Phantom Hourglass, Spirit Tracks, and Zelda 2 all in a row.
I do not.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you for that.
I don't want that for us either, but who knows? Maybe it'll happen.
I mean, we always talk about there's no such thing as a bad Zelda game, but those people didn't play Link's Crossbow Training or...
Yeah, well, thank God Link's Crossbow Training is not on our list, so yeah. But yes, truly not one of the all-time greats. Anywho, I think we're about ready to get out of here for tonight. Max, it's like seriously, this was a super last minute thing and we really appreciate you coming on. You know, we're trying to like get as much original content as we can during this hiatus period and not just be re-releasing old episodes for the entire thing. So this is like really appreciated you giving us your time to have a completely new conversation about a really interesting topic.
Absolutely. It was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Always. And hey, go ahead and plug your side gig one more time. I want people to know where to find that.
All right. There's this game called Destiny 2. Anyways, HyruleInterviews.com. It's a database of Zelda interviews and cool quotes from Zelda interviews that I've pulled out. You can go there and find the largest collection of insights into you know, the wisdom of the Zelda creators on the internet in one place. That's been my project for the last 6 months. Check it out if you get a chance.
Yep. Definitely go dive into that because I'm sure that there are some very interesting nuggets to glean there. If you've ever been even slightly interested by one of Max's asides into an obscure quote or mentality presented by a past Zelda developer, then that site is for you. And I recommend it highly. Max, I am sure it's not going to be very long before we talk to you on here again. We are already sorting out which episodes from season 5 we're going to have you on. So, until then, you know, I just want to say it's been wonderful having you and, yeah, we're not going to make anyone wait too long for another Max Nichols special experience.
Can't wait. Thanks, Lyndon.
Cool. Absolutely. Matt, you ready to get out of here?
I'm ready, Lyndon. It's late and it's cold in Texas. Let's wrap it up and head on home.
Are you going to play more Breath of the Wild this week?
I'm going to play some tonight before I go to bed. So yes.
That's cool. I wasn't going to end this podcast until you promised me that you were going to play more.
I will at least make it through Kakariko Village this week.
We bullied poor Matt into playing
the best game ever. I was planning on doing it anyway, but thank you for keeping me accountable. Accountability is key.
I'm really glad that this episode didn't have to end with any kind of like crazy hostage taking situation in which we didn't allow Matt to leave. So cool. Well, can't wait to talk to you more about that, Matt. Let's get into our outro and then close this guy out. Whew, okay. I have to scroll down the document to get to it. But I'm there now. It's cool. That was a whole moment.
You're well prepared, Lyndon.
I, as always, If you enjoyed today's show and you'd like a little extra Sacred Realms in your life, you can head over to patreon.com/sacredrealmspod and you can become a patron. If you've got no rupees, it is not a problem. 5-star Apple Podcast reviews are a great free way to support us. More reviews means that more people see our show. That makes us very happy, Hylians. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sacred Realms Pod for updates on the podcast and for behind the scenes action. Sacred Realms will be back next Wednesday with, not exactly sure. TBD. It'll be something. I guarantee you something will come out next Wednesday. We are, of course, playing through Breath of the Wild in anticipation of our first or our next season of the show, in which we're covering that game. Breath of the Wild can be played on the Wii U or the Nintendo Switch, although let's be real, you're playing it on the Switch. If you want to follow along with us, we do have our schedule for what order we're playing that game in posted to our Instagram, and it's in our Twitter timeline as well. So go check that out if you want to take the same path that we are. I think we've kind of come up with a pretty decent way to kind of make it through that decidedly nonlinear game. So in some ways, I'm kind of conflicted about putting that much structure to it. But, you know, we had to come up with something. So there you go. Go check that out. And we would, of course, love to hear your thoughts as you play through the game. Master Sword and above patrons on our Patreon are able to send us gameplay stories that we will read as we get into Breath of the Wild season. It's the perfect game for highlighting all of the different various ways that people kind of interact with its world and with all the special moments that happen there. So definitely looking forward to hearing those from all of y'all. But in the meantime, may your hearts be full. May your arrows never miss. We'll catch you next time. Sacred Realms is an independent podcast production which is produced, edited, and mixed by me, Lyndon Willoughby. Our music comes from Zelda and Chill by Mikkel and is graciously provided to us by Mikkel and Game Chops Records. Zelda and Chill is available to stream on Spotify or to purchase directly from GameChops.com. Finally, our thanks go to Nintendo for creating such exceptional and innovative experiences.